Hello and welcome to Resettled, the podcast of the Ethiopian Community Development Council, African Community Center, Washington, D.C. Resettled provides a platform to refugee voices and all of those involved in the process of refugee resettlement. Through it, we aim to showcase the full resettlement spectrum in the U.S., from refugee populations, receiving agencies, government officials, social workers, and more. Hear the stories of newcomers, caseworkers, and advocates as Resettled, a Human Journey, provides a look into the lives of the arriving and receiving communities in the Washington, D.C. area. My name is David Combs, and I'm your host. Thanks for joining us. Let's get started. This month's episode is on the topic of death and grief, a very heavy topic. Our guest today is Sarah Zullow. Sarah is the director of ECDC, ACC, for the Washington, D.C. metro area, and we're so fortunate to have her join us. Sarah holds degrees in criminology and Spanish from the University of Montreal and Metropolitan State University of Denver, and an MPA from the University of Colorado. She started with ECDC, working for the ACC in Denver. In her current role, Sarah oversees ACC D.C. Metro's refugee resettlement and other social service support programs provided in the Washington, D.C. area. Sarah was born in Ethiopia, and has lived in different parts of the world, eventually settling in the U.S. and coming to lead ECDC ACC. Sarah, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, David.
Of course. So this last year has been full of loss, grief, and suffering in so many different ways. And so many of us have a unique and specific story to tell related to loss. But Sarah tragically lost her husband earlier this year, and has been gracious enough to speak with us on the subject of death and grief. Like I said a second ago, this is a heavy topic. So Sarah, thank you so much for speaking with me about what is a difficult matter. And while this is an episode about death and grief, I'd love to begin the episode though by talking a little bit about your background. Can you tell the audience a bit about growing up in Ethiopia and how you ended up in the US?
Yes. So I was born in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, capital city of Ethiopia, from upper middle class educated family. Went to school to actually to a French school, you know, where my French background comes from, and later at a younger age, I had the chance to follow, family members and had the chance to live in different parts of the world, notably in West Africa and Europe, Canada. And eventually I chose the US as my home. So in a nutshell, this is sort of what my early life and early beginning has been.
So how old were you when you arrived in the U.S.?
I was a teenager, so I'll say 15, 16.
Okay, so you moved around a good bit.
Yes.
Before your time in the U.S. I wonder if you might tell us a little bit about your time, because you came to settle in Colorado. How did you find yourself in Colorado? It looks like you went to school there, but I wonder if you might talk to us a little bit about some of your schooling and your time there.
So, we actually first came to Washington, D.C. That's where I met my late husband. And after living for a little while in Washington, D.C., so my husband sort of convinced me to go to Colorado. He, even though he's Ethiopian, but he lived most of his life. He grew up in Denver, Colorado. And he said, Colorado is very similar to Montreal, because I lived a lot of, you know, a fair amount of my life. I was in Montreal, Canada. He said, you know, the same kind of skiing, the snow and all of those things. You feel like home. So why don't you come to Colorado? And I sort of, I guess I was in love too. So I just said, okay, Colorado sounds like a good place to go. So I ended up going to Colorado. I lived there for about 10, 11 years. So that's where I did my undergrad and my graduate school. Loved the area, that's sort of how I ended up in Colorado, schooling and personal life.
Well, that sounds pretty wonderful. I haven't spent a lot of time in Colorado. I've spent a little bit of time there. But the time that I have, I've always found that it's been very lovely. And I often feel like when I get there, I'm not spending quite enough time.
Quite a very progressive town, I would say. You know what I mean? ahead of time and a lot of things, you know, notably, you know, the legalization of marijuana. So they were always being ahead of everybody. They knew that, you know, the medicinal quality of the thing. And they also, I liked that about, specifically about Denver, you know, gender equality and all of those things. So I always loved the support of the city. So.
Indeed. It's always been a lovely place, like I said, when I visited. I grew up on the West Coast, and I grew up in Oregon, which has sort of a similar mindset, I would say. Mm-hmm. Now, so as noted, the general theme for this episode is a heavy one. It's death and grief. And so I wonder if, I would imagine that probably no topic is more difficult to talk about. I don't know how anything could be more difficult in a lot of ways. But I wonder if, as we transition from background, you've recently lost your husband, and I wonder how have you been finding strength these days? What we've been talking about, sort of like lovely places and places we've been and places that we enjoyed. What gives you joy right now as you go through a difficult time?
My kids. I mean, quite honestly, the twins, you know, I have 2.5-year-old twins, a boy and a girl. Their laughter, their joy, their curiosity for life. I think it's really that what makes me want to wake up every morning and keep going. And the responsibility that I feel that I have, I view myself as being the archive of the life that I've lived with their father. So as such, you know, I have that responsibility to continue what we started. But also I feel like at one time it will be my duty to sit down and let him know who he was. And all this is in me, is in my mind, is in those pictures and the videos, but it's up to me to explain this to him. So I literally feel sort of like I'm an archive. So one day we'll sit down, just the same way you go visit the archives in downtown DC, that we'll get to that point where we will sit down and I'll say, this is who your father was. So I guess that's what really keeps me going and give me joys in life right now.
That makes a lot of sense. I have a small child myself. He's about 6 years old. And as we've, and we certainly haven't experienced anything as difficult and weighty as you have, but I know that through the challenge sets that this last year has presented, I think to everyone in a way, his attitude and his sort of the joy of a small child is still very much there. And I think in some small way, I can appreciate the joy that children bring even in difficult times.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So if you would, I'd love to have, because you said that in a way you feel like the archive of your life and of the time you had with your husband. Would it be okay to ask if you tell us a little bit about him and what kind of person he was?
Yeah. Oh, wow. Abby was, he, in some ways, through life, I thought he knew he had a very short, lethal life. Now that I look back, and he was full of joys, full of adventures. I've been places with him, you know, whether it is to go all the way up to Machu Picchu, to go visit India, places, you know, Djibouti in Africa. I mean, random places that he would pick on a yearly basis. On a tight budget, because I work for a nonprofit, as you know, he worked in the school district, but he sort of made it happen. He's very adventurous, very open-minded. He had a big joy for life, in a way, and I'm happy, he got to enjoy it as much as he could in a short period of life that he lived on this earth. But I would describe him as being adventurous, generous, quiet, but really someone who have like a big appetite for life. So this is, you know, who I'd say he was.
I love the tone that you have as you describe him as an adventurer and all the wonderful things that you did together. I know that very few things, I think for a lot of people, are quite as wonderful as when you travel with people that you love. Mm-hmm. Those are wonderful, wonderful things. Mm-hmm. So as you noted a second ago, you have small children and, you know, twins, my goodness.
yeah, that was the trouble, yeah.
I have one, and that's sometimes you feel like it's keeping your head above water. So mm-hmm. people with twins mm-hmm. and more are heroes. I wonder how, to the extent that the little ones can, how are they processing the loss of their father, and to the extent that they can, and how much of a burden does that loss place upon you as you help them try to move forward?
I do believe they have, I don't know how much they all remember. As I said, they were barely 2 years old when he passed. It's almost been 6 months now he passed. In August of 2020. So I don't know how much memory of him they have, but he's always part of our conversations, you know. Every time, you know, at night when they go to bed, you know, we sort of make, it's sort of our own prayers, if you want, you know, where we talk, where we're thankful for everything of the day, where I'll just tell him, you know, Dad is still, you know, in your head and in your mind, your heart right now, so you can always talk to him, that he loves you very much. So in that sense, I think, and his picture is all over the place in the house, so they have that connection and that notion of Dad. And the burden, as I said, is that feeling of me will come as they grow a little bit more, you know, they start speaking now. So I'm sure the question will come, where is Dad in all of those above? Those type of question will come. I don't look forward for it, I'm not gonna lie. But at the same time, I think that was a burden of, you know, how do you tell a child that the dad that loved you very, very much, you know, could not be around, you know, he tried, he did everything that he can, you know what I mean? Unfortunately, he's not, but the love still exists, you know, that, you know, he will always in some form always going to be around and always be watching for, you know, watching them, you know, in some sort of form, you know, whether it is you're a big believer in the religion, what a religious form or even a spiritual form, you know, person. So, you know, there is this belief and understanding that, you know, we may depart, you know, the physical portion of us may depart, but there is a spirituality that will always continue. So I'm guessing that time will come and we'll sit around, you know, the dinner table, and that conversation will have to come. And you know, I'm looking forward for it. I'm afraid of it. You know, it's a mixed motion.
I that seems like if ever there was an appropriate mixed emotion, that feels like the most appropriate mixed emotion there could possibly be. Mm-hmm. I mean, to have to sort of anticipate that mm-hmm. conversation with small ones, that would be a difficult enough conversation with someone who's not very small. But the small children in particular, yeah, I can't imagine, again, the weight that must sort of accompany you as you anticipate that conversation. I wonder if you have advice for other parents who are in this kind of a circumstance. I mean, there's, you know, so on its own, there's challenges that I think sort of people around the world are facing right now, given COVID, given all of these things. But you have an especially unique circumstance where you're processing these things during the COVID pandemic. And then in addition to that, your family, you're an immigrant family. And so in a sense, you're untethered from sort of what home might have been. So I wonder if you have advice not only for parents who would be struggling with how to talk to children about this difficult issue, but in addition to that, the challenge sets that are sort of that come from being an immigrant in a place that is not necessarily, I shudder to say home because that's not the way I mean it, but home as in sort of the place from which you're from. So what do you make of that? Do you have advice or thoughts for other people who are struggling with similar challenges?
Not about advice, but a thought would be eerie enough. I lost my father when I was literally 6 months ago, 6 months, 6 months years old. And the similarity that happened, it's quite crazy to me. And culturally, I came from a culture we don't really talk much about, you know, the departed, you know. So I didn't have the knowledge that I wanted to have about my father, you know, growing up, you know. It's once I become an adult that I really did my own research, you know, dig up, you know, my home basements and, you know, and places that I wanted to see pictures of who he was, what he did, and all of those things. So the one advice that I will have for family is, please be open about who that person is. Tell your kids, you know, they're never too young to understand who that person was, what he represented. You know, if you have pictures or videos and everything, you know, sit down. It, as sad as that be, it also for the kids extremely important to know, you know, to put a face in that name, to know that, oh, I do have a father, you know what I mean? It's just a natural, I want people to understand death is part of living, of who we are. You know, it's a natural process. This is a hard one, you know, but to really, really spend the time letting children know when appropriate with age to who that person is, you know, what they represented, what they look like, what are the, you know, how does their voice sound? Keeping some memorabilia for them, you know, certain piece of clothing or jewelry or books, you know, whatever represented that person. I think that's what I was missing when I was young, and you know, as I said, I had to do my own research as an adult. So that's why I want to make sure that my children don't go through this, that, you know, they will know. And that's why I always said I felt like I'm sort of an archive of them, so I will be like, whenever they need that information, then I will let them know. So I think that would be one advice I have for the family. The second is, you're right, we currently live in an era of sadness, you know, because of COVID-19. A lot of people have lost a lot of their family members. We are isolated from our families and friends and social connection. We all feel, we just don't know what the future is all about. But I want people to still feel like they have the right to feel like their loss is unique to them. You know what I mean? I don't want people to feel like with sort of a collateral damage by saying, hey, you know, I don't really want to talk about the loss of my husband when many other people have lost so many other people, you know. No, this is still your loss. This is still your grievance. This is still, you know, your own emotion. So, you know, I just want them to still, you know, feel like empowered, but feel like if they need to talk about their own unique situation, their own unique sadness, I think they have the right to do so, you know. Because at a time when a nation, and in this case, when the entire world goes through this, you know, collective mourning, if you want, we sometimes may feel like I'm not really special, you know what I mean? Why me? But, you know, but I guess people have the right to ask why me, you know what I mean? Because it's all unique to us, you know what I mean? That loss, the loss of my husband is my loss, is the loss of my children, is the loss of my family, you know? So people still have to take that time, you know, so they don't really feel like this is just part of a big picture, if that makes sense.
It does. And I think that's very thoughtful perspective on it, actually. It probably would be easy in a sense to sort of have that, to maybe feel almost pressure to sort of gloss over a difficult thing, but really it would hurt so badly that you kind of can't do that. I think probably in a, if you truly want to heal from it, that seems very important to understand that uniqueness. And my goodness, what thoughtful advice and thoughtful perspective. I think that there's probably a number of people who will need to hear that and who will very much appreciate that perspective. I wonder, because you mentioned that we're sort of struggling through all this grief. My goodness, we're struggling through this grief as on an individual level, on a national level, on a global level. I wonder, how have you been finding connection and companionship, not only during COVID, but during this very difficult time that you personally, and this unique experience and this unique grief that you have?
I was fortunate enough to actually bury my husband back home. So I could have grieved, if you want, culturally, you know, in a culturally appropriate ways, you know, the way that we do it, you know, as Ethiopians, you know, the departure of someone is as important as when we welcome them. So, you know, we spend a lot of time with families and communities, etc. Of course, even back home, you know, it would have been much more grandiose, if I can use that word, you know what I mean? People would, you know, close to 100 of people would have come to the burial site if it wasn't covered, but a fair amount of people were still able to come. But once again, I said I was fortunate enough to be able to do so. So I had that connection, I had the families and all of those things, which forced me to put my hat as the social worker, if you want, you know, as the immigrant and trying to think, then what happened to those people who come here, as you said, and experience loss? And we live in a society where even, you know, as we go through this national, and global mourning, you know, the thing is, if you call and say, like, I lost a family member, you get 3 days of bereavement, you know what I mean? If you're lucky, a week, you know? And after that, you will be like, oh, well, do you have PTO time or sick time, you know? I try to think about it. It's like, is this now another skill that we need to teach those newly arrived refugees? Which we never ever thought about, you know what I mean? You come here and we're bombarding you with, you know, what is the work environment in the US? What is the school environment? You know, what are the to-do thing, or, you know, do, don't do this and do that, you know what I mean? Law enforcement and immigration, et cetera. But we never really took a time and be like, hey, and what happened if you lose a family member? Then, you know, how do you grieve? And literally, it really had become to knowing of how the how-to of grieving, which for most of us, that's something that we, it sort of come naturally, you know what I mean? Because the community will take care of you, you know? That something like this happens, you don't do much, you know, the community, the neighbors will come and take care of you. You know, you sort of stay home and you're giving that time to really grieve, and that's not the case here, you know what I mean? Whether it is making the funeral arrangement, you know, deciding where the burial site is going to be, how much is that going to cost? And God help us, it is expensive. I mean, like, it's horrendously expensive, you know? So, and then, as you said, there are certain things that you are accustomed to do traditionally that you can do here at all, you know? So it makes me think, it's like, is this going to be part of our cultural orientation now? Do we need to talk about this thing? Or how do we even talk about this type of things? You know, when people really came from area, you know, war-torn area, where they feel like, oh, now I finally found a place where I'm safe and you know, and that I can call home. But the reality of death always continues. So it is just another thing that I've been, you know, thinking of.
Lately. Yeah, that would not have occurred to me that that's a thing that might be something to consider during an orientation. And if not during an sort of an introduction, maybe just developing some sort of a handbook or some sort of programming for when it does occur, even if not during the initial orientation kinds of experiences, because my goodness, how important is that? But yeah, I can see your point about how that might not be something that's necessarily on someone's mind. What important perspective. Now, you'd mentioned the kinds of traditions and norms that people may or may not be able to have in their time here. I wonder if there have been. You mentioned you were able to bury your husband at home. I wonder if there are any specific traditions or cultural norms in this space that you might be able to tell some of the listeners about. That are the kinds of things that are maybe unique to your culture and to your country.
As I said, death have always been an extremely, you know, how you say your final goodbye to your loved one have been an extremely important portion of traditionally for us or for most African culture. For us, there is, you know, for at least, you know, 3 days, you don't leave the house. You know, after 3 days after the burial, there is, you know, that the families and neighbors and your church were always going to come. You know, people will cook for you. You always have company. No one really will leave you alone. You know, they just really want you to be surrounded and supported. You know, there is this, you know, the 3 days after the ceremony that we do, the 7 days after, there is, you know, the 40 days, the 80 days, and then we'll go to the 6 months, and then it goes to a year, and then it goes to a 7 years. So it's a lot of series, you know, of tradition and customs that, you know, we continue to do and to observe. And so far, I've been fortunate enough to do all of it, you know, 6 months, the anniversary death is coming up, when, you know, when we're going to do a prayer and remembrance. And often traditionally, you will go to church, and then once you have, you know, this prayer that will be done on his behalf, on his name, then you will go out and feed people, you know, mostly. There is no such thing of a soup kitchen back home, you know what I mean? There are people who will, you know, who will be at the church site, to whom you can go, you know, and then just, you know, distribute food or money, you know, or in, or, you know, in the name of the deceased. So those are the customs, kind of custom and culture that, you know, we do back home, what we don't necessarily have the luxury to do here. We still have, it's still this area, we're quite fortunate because there's a huge Ethiopian community. So we have churches and families and communities. So in some sort, we are able to continue some portion of our custom here too. So that's a good thing.
Thank you for that. That's, I'm certain that must be especially meaningful since you do, like you said, have a good bit of community here. I imagine that through these difficult times, that must be just so meaningful. And that's just a truly wonderful thing. You mentioned one thing that, and one thing that was especially, you said it a couple times now, that, you know, in the US, you know, when something like this happens, people might have, you know, oh, you've got 3 days and you've got to get back to the office. You know, unless you have PTO or those kinds of things, that makes it all the more difficult. So I wonder, with that in mind, do you have any thoughts on, because I mean, like, here's this difficult thing on its own would be enough to be so difficult or crush an individual person. But you have the struggle with grief that you must have. You have two small children, and you're the director of this organization. So how do you shoulder that heavy burden? Any one of those things would be enough, I think, to crush a person. But you have three of them and are thriving. Can you tell people how, and maybe give people some thoughts on that?
I think being busy keeps you going. It's a good thing, but you have to be careful and you have to be conscious to take time for yourself too, because at time I find myself being a bit overwhelmed, because as you said, you know, I'm just really juggling three things at the same time, the well-being of my children, this is a work have to continue, you know, I mean, the meetings and the grants and the reporting and the stuff that you have to supervise, you know, and advise and support, all of this will continue. So there is that part of you that say, hey, you know, I can do this, you know what I mean? I'm strong enough, I have that capacity, I can do it and I will do it and you will. And that's what I have been doing. But I'm also trying to learn to take a step back and be like, oh, it's okay to today to feel not as well as I should be, you know, to feel a little sad, to feel a little lost, to feel a little afraid, you know what I mean? You don't always have, especially when you're a woman and you lead, because you always feel like, hey, I can't really show weakness. I still have to show that I got it and I can do this. And that could at times be hurtful, you know? So it's to really say, hey, you know, it's a bit much for me today, you know what I mean? I need a break, you know? I just lost a husband, you know what I mean? I just lost someone I had been with for the last 20 years, you know what I mean? I have the right to say, what the child of God is happening in this, and, you know, in this world, and you know, to blow some steam, you know what I mean? And that's okay, you know what I mean? As long as you give yourself that space to do it, you know, in a healthy way, because otherwise I think it might come crashing down, you know, and you cannot always be perfect in everything, you know what I mean? And that's one thing that I have learned with my husband, because there is no perfection, because for us is the moment we felt like we got everything, you know, we career-wise were good, we bought this really nice home in a nice area, we had the kids, and then we got this cancer diagnosis. So, you know, you can't really control life, so it's okay to just say, hey, you know what I mean, I might not be the best mom right now, you know what I mean? I may not be the best director. I might not be the best, a friend or companion, but that's okay. As long as I try to do the best that I can, you know what I mean? I can, because if you always strive for perfection, and I think that where Middle City, you know, that we can crash, specifically when you go through something as difficult as this one, because the tendency will be, then what, you know, it happens, I need to move on. And yes, I am a firm believer that we need to move on. You know, you need to move on, you need to continue, life continues, you know, as much as we feel like, oh, this is it, life will continue, but it's also, you need to give permission for yourself to mourn. You need to give permission for yourself to be sad. You need to give permission for yourself to be awake. You need to give permission for yourself to may not be the perfect, as I said, the perfect everything. You know, so I think this, that balancing act, you know, I'm trying to be good at.
Did it take you some time before you could sort of give yourself that kind of permission to not be perfect? Did it take a little, was it something that you were able to get to with relative quickness, or did that take some time to say, to give yourself that permission to maybe not be perfect at all moments?
Oh, it takes some time, and I'm still working through this. It takes some time because, you know, everything continues, you know what I mean? I mean, you have kids, you know, the kids will always going to wake up in the morning. There are things that they want, you know what I mean? Hey, where's my food? Where's my clothes? I want to go out and I want to go and play and all those things. And in the meantime, you know, you have your report are due, you have this meeting that is, you know, then you need to do, there's this person who, you know, to whom you need to have that conversation, etc. You know, and there's this grief that come and get you out of nowhere. You know, it could just be, I don't know, a restaurant that you pass by that you used to go to, you know, a smell, you know what I mean, a music. So it just sometimes, it you know, it all come crashing on you. So it takes time to recognize. And then you're like, oh, okay, hey, you know what I mean? I still have to be strong and have to make sure that everything is okay, that you don't have to control everything. But at time, it takes time. And it's okay to even realize by saying, oh, okay, you know what I mean? It takes me a little bit of time now. I'm recognizing, you know, I might need a little bit of a break now. You may not want to engage yourself in as much, you know, extracurricular activities, you know, that you used to do with as before. It's okay to ask around you, even at work, by saying, hey, you know, that means this week there's that many meetings that I can do, you know, can anyone step up and help out with this? You know, with your kids, if you have friends and families that could help, you know what I mean? It's also to say, hey, can you come and help me out, you know, for a few hours here and then, you know? You have to be able to ask for help, you know what I mean? But it's definitely not something that comes, you know, quickly. And I think it's a work in progress.
Well, that seems like just the most thoughtful way to put it, as being a work in progress. I don't know how it could be anything other than that. But the thoughtful approach that you take to this and that you're sharing with people, I think is truly helpful and truly inspired and thoughtful. You've been generous with your time and your feelings. I know we're getting sort of late on a Friday afternoon. And I'm wondering, as we head towards the end of a week, and I think even for anyone right now, this, the end of the week just sort of feels like a time to relax and a time just to take a minute for yourself and just say, oh goodness, I needed a minute. Is there anything you do to unwind after a particularly hard conversation or day or week? Is there some way that you have just something that's special to you that can help you sort of decompress a little bit?
One of the big part of our family is my dog, which I don't know where he is, you know what I mean? That before even having a kid, we adopted this, you know, the nice little, I don't know, he's a mix of Chihuahua and something else. I never really knew exactly, and which is fine, you know, he's actually perfect the way it is. A walk with my dog, and I feel like because he's been with us, with me and my husband, you know, we adopted him, you know, together and been with us a while, you know, just taking him for a walk. And it's almost like I can talk to him and he understands what I go through, which is quite crazy. But, you know, that's little walk that I still take, you know, with him. Or sometimes I'll just sit and he'll come and sit next to me and then be like, what a week it was, you know what I mean? Or I'll be like, I really messed up on this. So I think I did well with this one. Maybe I should be a bit more patient with this kid this week, or all of those kinds of things. And he just sit here and listen, and give me that look. I think this one way to unwind, I would say. Plus a good glass of wine helps.
Of course, that's above many things.
a nice full body Bordeaux will be a good way to unwind. But it's basically little things, you know what I mean? And I really now that my husband has passed, we live in very difficult time, and I still say it to people, is like, you don't know how much time none of us have on this world, you know what I mean? Yes, right now seem to be extremely difficult. You know, you are all, I mean, look at me, I'm sitting, you know, your bedroom have become your office, you know, you don't really leave home. And you know, there's so many things that we have done that we don't get to do, but there is still joy in lives that we don't really pay attention to as we should, because once that time comes, no amount of prayer, no amount of medical emergency or miracle will save you. I mean, so when is that time to go? I think you will go, and we will leave all this behind us. You know what I mean? So really taking that time to enjoy and to say, hey, I'm okay. You know what I mean? It's a difficult thing to do. You know, I mean, I'll be honest with you, you know, and even me, you know, who went through all this difficult time, a time I'm not, I think, as grateful or thankful for, you know, for everything that I have around us, but really to take a moment in your life on a daily basis to just say, hey, you know, this was just a beautiful time, you know what I mean? You know, this little thing that happened to me today is just a good thing. So I guess that's... Cool.
Speaking of beautiful things and beautiful time, I wonder and I know this wasn't one of the things we talked about, but I wonder if you might have some, if there's something in particular, maybe a couple of things that give you reason for optimism and hope as we press forward into we're still in a relatively new year. And I wonder if in the coming weeks, months, years, if there's anything in particular that you're feeling especially optimistic about.
The new administration that we just have, I mean, this is, you know what I mean? It's hopeful and it's nice. At least, you know, even seeing that the reversal of things, you know, of good things that we had were put on the back burner or who were, you know, stopped, you know, for one reason or the other, to being able to say, hey, you can continue on this, you know what I mean? Whether it is on the Affordable Care Act or the Muslim ban and all of those things, you know, I mean, being lifted, specifically in the type of work that we do. This is extremely exciting and a great news. The fact that there's probably going to be a vaccine, and at some point, you know, we could go back to some sort of normal life. I don't know what normal life is anymore. As I said, you know, we should not have an expectancy in life. You know, I'm going to do the A, B, and C, and everything will be okay, because you really never know. But some sort, maybe you will get to go and enjoy a nice meal with friends, you know what I mean, and not be a friend.
Oh, my. How amazing would that be right now?
You know, really, you know what I mean? That could be. And then my kids, as I say, their innocence, you know what I mean? I take them for a walk and then they just, you know, they would just pick a piece of wood and then they're so excited about it, you know what I mean? This excitement, this joy of life that they have, you know what I mean? I don't know, sometimes I don't know what they see. And I hope sometimes I said I could see what they're seeing, you know, this love that they have, their laughter. So I guess this is what, you know, keep me going.
I share a similar bit of enthusiasm there about some of those points. I remember, you know, golly, it's been, you know, a few days now. But I remember watching the inauguration a week or so ago with my son. He's still little. He's only six and a half. But it was interesting having him watch that and for the first time in a way that he could at least sort of understand a little bit of what was happening, you know, and how excited he was and how there was something just in the tone of the remarks that were that even he was, it's funny because he's such a little boy, but there he was clapping and I wasn't, you know, telling him to do that. He sort of just impulsively did it. And I remember just sort of watching him as I observed him doing that, thinking, wow, this is, you know, what a wonderful thing to observe. So I think I know what you mean. We're coming to the end of our time. And I thank you so much for sharing your time with me. I know how busy you are, and I know how many directions you must be pulled in. So the fact that you would sit down and have this lovely conversation with us is truly wonderful. So you're an inspiration to me, and I think all the people listening to this podcast. And I hope you'll join us again another time. But before we sign off, I wonder if you have any last thoughts or any last things that you want to tell someone. If you can anticipate that there's listeners to this podcast, and if there's one last thing you might like to get across to any of them, what might you say?
I'll say, enjoy the time you have with your loved one to the fullest, you know what I mean? Because you never know when it will end. So I mean, whatever you can give, whatever love that you have and you can give, I mean, you know, just if tell them, I mean, whether it is you want to tell your husbands or your significant other or your friend or your family and your friend, take a moment and just tell them that I appreciate you and I love you and thank you for the thing that you have done for me. I think that's a wonderful thing, because the one thing that I can say, as painful as it is losing my husband, I have no regret at all. You know, I would have done this life all over again in a heartbeat. You know what I mean? The good, the bad, and then everything is because of, you know, it's, we took the time to do what we wanted to do in that, you know, very short period of time. So I will say to people, you know, just really take the time to appreciate what you have, to appreciate each other. You know what I mean? Because it will come to an end and you don't know when that time will come. So, while you have them around, you know, just take the time to say, hey, I love you, you know, thank you. This is what I will say.
Well, thank you. I think that's truly wonderful advice, and the kind of advice we would all be better for if we take that advice and we act upon it.